researchers at UW-Eau Claire, Oshkosh, and Milwaukee spent a year identifying ways Wisconsin's manufacturers can tap into global markets for green energy technologies. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network, and I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. Can Wisconsin rebuild its manufacturing economy and do so sustainably? Our guests this morning say our prospects are exciting if the state plays its cards right. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the studio, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Our guests today were part of the teams from across the state that looked into the future and the economy of manufacturing in Wisconsin. Thomas Kemp is the dean of the Department of Economics at UW-Eau Claire. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning. Thanks for the promotion, but just department chair.
Department chair it is then. And Matthew Jewell is the Associate Professor of Material Science and Biomedical Engineering at UW-Eau Claire. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Lee. Great to be with you.
Thank you both for being here. And let's begin with a big takeaway. You spent a year looking across the state of Wisconsin at opportunities, possibilities, and potential for manufacturing. What did you find? And Tom, I'll start with you.
Well, we were looking to identify, well, first of all, we were looking to understand what energy production trends look like going forward. Of course, currently, most of Wisconsin energy is produced by either coal-fired or natural gas-style power plants. And we wanted to find out, you know, is that something that's expected to continue, or are we expected to move into other alternative energy sources based upon the projected economics? And estimates are that we will be moving in that direction. And then so knowing that, we wanted to better understand how Wisconsin might more effectively tap into the likely evolving energy production trends.
Well, without coal, where do we find green energy production?
Well, there's a variety of types of energy that go by that term, so-called green energy. We focused on a few specific areas, which are really not my area of expertise. I think Dr. Jewell could speak more effectively to the various sources of energy and the nature of their operations.
Yeah, I'll just chime in there. So, of course, I think probably most of your listeners are familiar with wind power and solar power. Those are pretty well established so-called green energy technologies, and I think we've all seen a wind farm or a solar field somewhere. And so we looked at those too, but we also looked at biogas, which in Wisconsin, at least with the connections to our agriculture industry, is a little bit more niche, but an interesting way to produce electricity and help to manage industrial wastes, agricultural wastes. And then not an energy production technology, but of course, as we look into some of these technologies, you have to be able to store the electricity somehow. So in addition to those production technologies, we also looked at lithium-ion batteries, which, of course, is becoming the dominant player in both large-scale energy storage technologies like for electric vehicles, but also for smaller things like all the battery-powered tools that people use around their homes for drills and that sort of thing. Those are all essentially powered by lithium-ion batteries now. And Wisconsin actually is one of the major players with Milwaukee Tool. And Johnson Controls, we make actually a very significant fraction of those battery packs for those smaller hand-powered devices. So those are the sectors or the areas that we looked at in the report.
And Wisconsin is already tapping in then to the supply chain for green energy at a global scale.
Yeah, I mean, so you know what we want to distinguish a little bit in the report. So as Tom said, we have to first of all know or feel confident that these are continued growth areas, and there's lots of folks out there that have looked at that, and we can talk more about those kind of trend lines if you'd like to. But also, when we talk about the supply chain, what we're really saying is, how can our manufacturers who have very traditional, good traditional strengths in places like the automotive industry, we want to maintain our presence there. And Tom actually can speak to maybe the existing manufacturing capacity in the state, but then we also want to be able to start getting more involved in making components for these different green energy technologies. And those might end up here in Wisconsin, and those might go into a wind farm built in Missouri or something, but that's fine. And so we're just trying to understand where would there be some opportunities to take what we're already good at in Wisconsin as a manufacturing state and then transition more into some of these areas that seem to be strong growth areas for the future.
It's Matthew Jewell along with Thomas Kemp. They're professors at UW-Eau Claire. They've identified opportunities for Wisconsin manufacturing companies to begin building the technology used in green energy machines like wind turbines and solar panels, and as we're learning, the potential for biogas here in Wisconsin. Do you own any green energy technology like solar panels or lithium ion batteries? And you see Wisconsin companies should be making a push to manufacture green technology for wind turbines and, as we'll explore, biogas digesters. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the show. Ideas at WPR if you'd .org if you'd like to email. Marcus in Milwaukee, you're on the Ideas Network. Good morning.
Good morning. So my question is, since we have so much coastline along Lake Superior and Lake Michigan, there's a gentleman, Bob Ballard, he's the one who discovered the Titanic. He created a kinetic buoy that can generate energy by going up and down with the waves and the water that we already have. And I believe it's an open patent that he's filed for it. And I guess I'm wondering, why are we not exploring, trying to use our waves and our water and our wind, which is right there, and use that technology?
That's a very interesting question. Thanks for asking that. I don't know a lot about the kinetic buoy system myself, but I'll just tell you a couple things that people tend to think about when we think about what sort of energy production technologies can we deploy at scale, meaning enough or generate enough electricity out of them that we could really power, you know, hundreds of homes or something. And a couple things that people think about. One is, you know, how much energy are we going to get out of that kinetic buoy? And so it might sort of work from the physics point of view, but there might be limitations in terms of just exactly how much electricity or how much energy we can produce. And the other thing that people think about, and maybe some of your listeners are familiar with, on the East and West Coast, for example, there are very, from a sort of engineering point of view, there's very nice designs for things like offshore wind farms, and some of those are being built. But then people start to also have kind of visual concerns. They don't necessarily want to, you know, look out into the ocean and just see nothing but a line of wind turbines. And so I would expect that maybe some of those same considerations would come into play. And people want to, you know, look out over Lake Michigan and maybe not have to see, you know, thousands and thousands of these buoys. But actually what you're describing, Marcus, is actually common to all these technologies. So when a wind farm gets built down in Lafayette County, for example, you know, the folks who live there say, hey, you know, I'm don't necessarily want to have to see this on my window every day. So there's lots of advantages of green technology over the traditional approaches, but then there's also some challenges, right? And so how we deploy them and how quickly we get them out there is really about balancing those concerns.
But those challenges for the not in my backyard ideas, those would apply to smokestacks as much as they'd apply to wind turbines, I'd imagine.
That is true. Although I think one thing you tend to see with some of these green energy technologies, which again, in general, we're pretty bullish about, but they tend to be distributed over larger areas, right? So the wind farms tend to take up, you know, many dozens or hundreds of acres, whereas some of the more traditional approaches have a little more compact footprint, but that's certainly very true, Lee.
And solar panels as well. Our guests, Matthew Jewell and Thomas Kemp, part of the team from across the state that spent a year looking into Wisconsin manufacturing potential and tapping into the supply chain for the global and growing market for green energies. What do you see as you look across Wisconsin? Is there potential there, and can we rebuild manufacturing in this state, and what would that mean for our economy going forward? What does a green Wisconsin look like to you? Our guests spent a year studying it, and their results are part of our discussion this morning along with you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We will continue to explore the untapped potential and the future economic prospects for the state of Wisconsin when we continue on the morning show. It's the Ideas Network. After spending a year studying Wisconsin's economic potential, our guests found that with some coordination between the public and private sectors, we could make Wisconsin a leader in manufacturing for a long time to come. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network, and I'm Lee Rayburn, and are you ready to get on board with the green economy? What coordination between the government and industry, if any, would you like to see? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the studio. Email ideas at WPR.org. Matthew Jewell and Thomas Kemp are professors at UW-Eau Claire. They've identified opportunities for Wisconsin manufacturing companies to begin building the technology used in green energy production. And Tom, Matt had mentioned that you had looked at the potential of manufacturing in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin, a strong manufacturing state, along with what is now loosely considered the Rust Belt. When you took a look at potential, what did you find?
Yeah, so a big part of this project was trying to identify from the several hundred thousand businesses across the state areas or specific firms that could potentially transition into greener energy production or greener energy supply chain if market conditions were to dictate that. And I think it's good to know that Wisconsin manufacturing has always been strong and remains strong. Indeed, Wisconsin employment in manufacturing has for the most part over the last 10 years been growing fairly consistently. And it comprises of roughly 16% of total employment, or nearly 500,000 jobs. And that's quite significant compared to the federal average. It's only about 10%, right? So Wisconsin manufacturing is significantly more significant as a share of the economy when compared to other U.S. states. Within that, Wisconsin manufacturing is quite broad in the sense that we do a lot of different things here across the state, and that makes for a fairly exciting and dynamic environment. And of course, that also implies a lot of possibility to move relatively quickly in different directions. Again, if market conditions dictate it.
Well, and we're seeing market conditions right now on a global scale with a pandemic. Do we know whether or not green energy is cyclical when it comes to the economy? Is it if we were to invest in it as a state, when economic downturns happen, what sort of impact would that have on the economy of Wisconsin when we go green?
Yeah, there certainly are going to be some short-term cyclical effects as we go through the pandemic now. And I think industries everywhere are trying to understand what that's going to look like. But I think in the long term, I think the trend lines are very clear that green energy is going to continue to grow as a percentage of how we get our electricity in this country. And just to give one or two statistics on that, just within solar, for example, it's very difficult to overstate how much cheaper and more economical the production of the actual solar cells has gotten in the last 10 or 15 years. To the point now, there's a study that came out about 2 years ago. It's to the point where building and maintaining a solar field is actually cheaper by some metrics than just maintaining and operating a coal-fired power plant. So even if you've already paid for that coal-fired power plant and you're not investing in the infrastructure, you're not paying off bonds for it, just to buy the coal and operate the plant and pay the people, it's actually cheaper to build a solar field. And that's why you start to see much larger projects happening. So when we talk about energy production, we often talk in terms of megawatts. And as a reference point for your listeners, a megawatt is enough electricity to power something like 500 or 600 homes. And in the past, most of these solar fields built around Wisconsin would be sort of 1 to 5 megawatts. And now there are at least a half dozen very large projects that are more on the order of 150 to 300 megawatts. And that's starting to get competitive with the amount of energy produced by more traditional plants. A coal-fired power plant or a natural gas power plant might produce 500, 800, or 1,000 megawatts. So the solar fields are getting much larger and much more economical. So feel very confident that's a long-term trend that's going to maintain.
And Matt, as you talk about this technological development of solar energy technology and how fast it's happened and how cheap it's become, does that raise a red flag about investing in infrastructure technology that may be outdated by the time the investment is made? I mean, how do you pivot with technology advancing as fast as it has in solar energy in the last 15 years?
Well, I think that's a huge challenge for every industry, first of all. And I think all you can do is make sure that the investment you're making is a good one, at the time and for the consumers. So you know, the electricity industry here in Wisconsin is a regulated industry. These projects have to go before a public board, a public service commission, to be approved. And so we just, you know, want to make sure that the plan is a good deal for the locals in the area, for the members of the cooperative or the utility. And then I think that's a good basis for moving ahead with these projects.
That's Matthew Jewell, along with Thomas Kemp, two of the those who studied and took a year looking at what it would take to move Wisconsin into a green economy, the potential that lies in Wisconsin already, and what we can see ahead if we play our cards right. And Tom, when we talk about jobs and manufacturing jobs in Wisconsin and how you, it's part of the economy here, what jobs would be created or continued to be created in Wisconsin if we take this path towards a green energy building green energy technology components?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, and that's part of the I guess concerns or that we're hoping to alleviate. I guess I would say that I don't think there needs to be that many changes in jobs. That was the sort of purpose, to identify firms that could transition. In other words, that we're not talking about necessarily new jobs or destruction of existing jobs, but rather transitioning of the types of things that we do in our jobs. So rather than producing components for, you know, maybe a car or a bus or a truck, you know, maybe that same firm and those same employees are producing components of windmills or wind turbines, excuse me. You know, maybe the firm that was producing coatings for existing manufactured products are now producing coatings for solar cells. So it's not so much that jobs are being destroyed or created, but rather being transitioned into new things. And of course, you know, anytime jobs are either created or destroyed, there's a disruption of people's livelihoods and their lives. And the future looks like it's green energy, right? And this is the question then for me personally is, how do we make that transition as painless for everybody as possible, while also ensuring that we maximize our share of that future market, right?
Right.
But if I can just
reiterate that point a little bit, I think what we really try to do in this report is not present opportunities, say, look, make this multi-million or multi-billion dollar investment and hope it pays off. As Tom was saying, instead, we tried to really get a little bit granular and say, okay, what are some of these companies already good at and already doing well, and how can they use those same technologies or processes or competitive advantages and now apply them over to some of these different supply chains for green energy?
So Matt, I have to ask then, what's stopping these companies from making the transition now? What would it take to make the pivot, and why hasn't the pivot happened yet?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, it is to a certain extent. So we identified a number of companies that are participating in green energy supply chains, and that's outlined in the report. But also, there's always just a barrier of entry to any new industry of, first of all, just kind of knowledge of what the needs are there. And also there sometimes is some, you know, development or sort of tweaking of an existing process that's needed. So one of the things we tried to look at in the report is, you know, what are some funding opportunities there? Are there some ways, for example, that universities and these companies can partner together to seek some research and development funding through the federal government, through other sources, to help make those transitions and get them kind of market ready?
So the relationship or public-private partnerships would play a role. But Tom, do you see the likes of Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation playing a part in going forward here?
I would expect so. Yeah, I mean,
what kind of role would they play?
Yeah, well, I would go back a little bit to what we were talking about a moment ago. You know, so as we've been talking about how market conditions are changing relatively rapidly. So whereas certain technologies were really not effective competitively just a few years ago, those are now becoming very competitive. And as those market signals start changing, right, it's going to require new economic relationships to be built, right? And so across supply chains, across different firms. Okay, well, now I'm producing this rather than that. So I'm going to be working with these firms rather than those firms, and so on and so forth. And so there's a real role to be played by for information. And I think that's a space for public-private partnerships. I also think it's a place where I would expect the various economic development entities across the state, whether it be the state level like WEDIC or whether it be more local entities, would be working to, or the universities for that matter, would be working to partner firms with other firms that, you know, maybe able to work more effectively in an environment of these new sets of prices.
That's Thomas Kemp. He, along with Matthew Jewell, our guests, they're professors at UW-Eau Claire, and they've identified opportunities for Wisconsin manufacturing companies to begin building the technology used in green energy machines like wind turbines, solar panels, and we'll get to biogas after the news as well, and perhaps hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. The report is called Advancing Wisconsin's Green Manufacturing Economy, and you can find it on our website at wpr.org/mornings. It's The Morning Show, and I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent today. Our guests were on the research team that spanned three different UW system schools and took a year to investigate what it would take. And there are some minor tweaks, and there are some opportunities on the horizon. And if you look into the future, you will see it is expected to be powered by green energy. So what would be the downside to a greener manufacturing economy? What do you see as its opportunity cost? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the studio. Ideas at WPR.org. Matthew Jewell's an associate professor of material science and biomedical engineering at the UW-Eau Claire. Thomas Kemp is the chair of the Department of Economics at UW-Eau Claire. And Tom, let's say that a Wisconsin manufacturer wants to get into green energy technology and thinks they could make components for solar panels, wind turbines. How do they make sure it makes sense to them before they move forward?
Well, just like any other business prospect, right? It would be whether they can make a profit doing so, and you know that is far more likely today than it was just a short time ago. With cost of production going down in those areas, it's making that market, solar in particular, far more feasible as a business prospect than it would have been just a few short years ago. So, you know, if firms maybe at Wisconsin firms had maybe thought, you know, it was something that they couldn't do, or had looked at the business plan maybe 5-6 years ago, you know, I would encourage them to take a second look today, again, because the market has changed so much, both on the supply side and the demand side, with growing demand and also lowered supply costs.
And as these changes continue, how do you continue to adapt and identify customers?
Well, again, the same way, you know, you would with any other business, is you start reaching out to people that you would expect would be operating in those markets. And that's part of what we're hoping to do with this report, is to bring different folks together, whether it be the public sector, the private sector, academia, to better understand what the emerging trends are, both in terms of technology as well in terms of markets, and to better partner suppliers with demanders for different components.
I was just thinking of like GM in Janesville and Chrysler in Kenosha, and how so much manufacturing jobs were built from, you know, companies that were directly associated with our car manufacturing. And so can we tap into those markets? And are there big green energy companies that we can find and identify, and like we did with GM and Chrysler, to help build the economy in the state?
Well, you know, GM and Chrysler didn't just pop into existence from nowhere. Of course, they were built over many years. General Motors in particular was decades in the making. Of course, General Motors has made a variety of products during its lifetime, including having participated in wartime production during World War II, which was vastly different from the consumer markets that they had been dealing in prior to and after the war. We can identify a large number of Wisconsin manufacturers who made those transitions to wartime production and then back out of them. So what producers can do when conditions dictate is I think maybe a little more open than what might seem obviously apparent. I would hope that if market conditions dictated it, that some of the large producers in Wisconsin would be able to make fairly effective transitions into those markets if need be. After all, GM went from producing, you know, sedans and coupes and light trucks in 1940 to producing a whole host of military items by 1942. Even here where I am in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, we have a number of firms that made those transitions quite quickly. But of course, quick transitions require good information. And that's what we're trying to do here.
That's Tom Kemp, along with Matthew Jewell, our guests, as we look at the future of Wisconsin and the potential that lies there for Wisconsin manufacturing companies to begin building the technologies or continue to increase building the technologies used in green energy machines like wind turbines and solar panels. Interested in what your take would be this morning at 1-800-642-1234 and how you see the public-private partnership playing out and what this could mean for the Wisconsin economy as you see it. Kelly and Cascade, you're on the Ideas Network. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm the green team leader for my workplace, and we're a member of Wisconsin Sustainable Business Council. I'm also a rehab manager, and I hire a significant number of people coming into the workforce. I think it's huge in terms of workforce retention and attracting our millennials coming out of college and just people who are really looking to have opportunities in the green sector to be able to stay in Wisconsin. I think green manufacturing is definitely an awesome way to go.
We have certainly heard about the brain drain in Wisconsin before as college graduates leave the state with the knowledge that they've been given. Did this study look at the potential for maintaining the college graduates and keeping them here and what green energy and green technology might do in that regard?
So that's not a component we looked at explicitly, but Kelly, you really make a great point that as younger people are making decisions about their future, they're looking for to live somewhere that first of all is a place that they want to live, but also where they see a future, where they see that that things are going in the right direction, and so there's no question that for a lot of younger people having a stronger base here in Wisconsin of green energy technologies and ability to be in those industries is something that they see as there is a clear trend line of those industries increasing. And so maybe even there's one conversation about sort of does that align with their values, but also just a conversation of is there stable employment in this? Hmm. We are, as we've said, very bullish on the future of these technologies. And so we think it's a good bet to try and get more integrated into those supply chains.
All right, Matt, let's talk biogas here. Another green energy technology. What is it?
Yeah, so this was a fun one for me to look at, too. It's not my area of expertise. We had two colleagues from UW Oshkosh, Kevin Crawford and Brian Langolf, who really kind of spearheaded this part of the project for us, but it was great for me, too, to get more educated about it. So at one level, biogas is going to be a little bit smaller component to green energy solutions. While wind and solar, we talk in terms of megawatts, which are millions of watts. With biogas, we're kind of talking kilowatts or thousands of watts. So a little bit smaller scale, but can really be a good solution in a lot of places around Wisconsin, particularly because what biogas does is it takes organic matter, which could be animal waste like manure, or it could be byproducts from making animal feed or just from even harvesting crops. And it takes those organic components, you put them into an environment, into a thing called a digester, and without any oxygen present, those are going to start to break down in the presence of bacteria and produce methane, which is essentially natural gas. And then that methane can be used either to create electricity, to produce heat, convert it into chemicals. There's a lot you can do with it. And so it's, first of all, a potential solution to some of the challenges we have in the state with what to do with manure, how to, you know, get rid of it safely with these larger animal operations that we have around the state now. And then it can also be really kind of a more local solution for powering farms and homes and businesses. So it's really kind of an interesting technology.
Would this be a technology available to family farms, or is this, as you mentioned, because it's not megawatts, more kilowatts, would this be available for larger farms like CAFOs?
Yeah. So first of all, there's not such a large distinction anymore between family farms and CAFOs. That distinction is starting to get blurred. But the answer is yes. It could be something that can be built on the family farm scale. And that was actually one of the recommendations of the report, is that the biogas industry needs a little bit more of a turn towards a service economy, or there's a need to make these things a little bit more portable and turnkey, so you can just kind of drop them in. But yes, from an economics point of view, these are certainly units that you can imagine installing even on relatively small farms.
Yeah. So, Matt, what would a Wisconsin manufacturing company create to aid in biogas production, do you think?
Yeah. So that Kevin and Brian, our colleagues, looked at this sector, they decided that, you know, there's not quite the same. When we talked about some of these other technologies like wind and solar, you know, we're looking at things like, how do you make very high hardness, high toughness bearings for a wind turbine that will produce very little resistance and have a long lifetime, right? So that's a very kind of traditional manufacturing problem. Again, utilizes existing capacity we have here in the state, and how can we apply it? For biogas, they said, you know what, it's not really the physical components of the digester that need to be improved. It's not like we need to improve the efficiency of the digester itself or find new materials for it. It's more of these broader kind of policy questions. So for example, in Wisconsin, if you are producing electricity at your home, you can sell it back to the grid. But if you get above the level of about 20 kilowatts, you are given a much lower price, essentially much more like a wholesale price than a retail price. And that makes it very difficult for some of these biogas facilities to be economically viable. So they suggested a number of kind of policy things we could do to make biogas more attractive. And one of them would be to have more kind of attractive or more like retail rates for the electricity that they sell back to the grid.
Very interesting. That's Matthew Jewell along with Thomas Kemp, our guest for the hour, as they took a year to look at what Wisconsin could do to tap into the global markets for the green energy production supply chain. What do you see in the future for Wisconsin's economy? 1-800-642-1234. When we talk about economic development, public-private partnerships in Wisconsin, the big story for the past few years would have been Foxconn. What role does that company play in the future of manufacturing in Wisconsin, and the study done by our guests, as we conclude with your calls as well at 1-800-642-1234? What would you like to ask before we're done at the end of the hour? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. So what if Wisconsin's economy became battery-operated? What would we need to do to get in the global supply chain for lithium-ion batteries? And how could Wisconsin become an abundant energy producer and export biogas to other states? It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guests spent a year tackling those questions and have found ways for manufacturers to develop more products for green energy technologies. So what's worth our investment? 1-800-642-1234 is the number of the studio. Matthew Jewell is an associate professor of material science and biomedical engineering at UW-Eau Claire, part of the team along with Thomas Kemp, who is the chair of the Department of Economics at UW-Eau Claire. And let's go to the phones where Avery's in Madison. Avery, you're on the Ideas Network. What do you think?
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to talk briefly. I have some family out in Colorado, and a bunch of the people in their neighborhood are switching to solar power. And it's had a bit of an adverse effect. The local electrical company has started charging a fee for being on their land without using their power. And I was just wondering if there's anything that in Wisconsin that's kind of similar, where, you know, is there any way that we can stop these companies from charging us for not using their electricity, you know, kind of, you know, punishing us for making the right choice and switching over to green power?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Avery. When we talk about the regulatory environment around electricity generation and distribution and sale, Just as we're talking about how manufacturers have to be nimble and adjust their production as the markets change, it's also true for utilities. And so on the one hand, you know, if we're going to have all this infrastructure of distributing electricity to everybody, we have to pay for it. So, okay, we need some way of doing that. But indeed, some of the changes that have been made, including here in Wisconsin, to the regulatory environment, make it harder to realize the payback time on your investment. In other words, for example, here in Wisconsin, if you generate electricity from solar, the amount per kilowatt hour you receive is a little bit less, but you pay a higher fixed fee on your utility bill. And you know, so of course we want to maintain a strong utility grid. So we want to make sure that those utilities can still operate. But we also want, as you're saying, we want people who make those investments in their homes and do these more distributed technologies, make sure that they can realize those investments too. So I think what's important actually is just stability. We need stability in the regulatory environment so that both manufacturers and consumers can make good long-term choices.
The report was out, I think, in July, and you sent it to hundreds of companies across the state. Have you received any feedback yet from them? And if so, what have they said?
Yeah, we have. We've heard back from a number of companies. I've had discussions in the last couple of weeks with, I think, at least five or six companies that have contacted us. And what we're trying to do at this stage now, kind of in our work, is because, of course, all of these industries, we're talking about dozens of supply chains and hundreds of companies. There's no way that one report can kind of comprehensively hit every interesting niche or opportunity. So now we're kind of trying to sort of interview some of these companies, understand what they do, what they think their competitive advantages are. And then we'll do a little bit of follow-up research on our side to say, okay, here may be some more targeted or specific opportunities you could look at. And we feel like that's a good public-private partnership. That's a good use of the kind of Wisconsin idea that we in the UW system like to talk about. And it's a way that we can help kind of hopefully point them in the right direction.
So this work is continuing.
Yeah. So we were funded this past year by a group out of Madison called the Tommy Thompson Center on Public Leadership. So we were very, very grateful for their funding for the report. But now we're continuing on a more one-on-one basis with some of these companies, just of our own initiative.
It's been brought up a couple of times this morning, but just to talk a little more, Tom Kemp, about how this public-private partnership will be, at least to some degree, a key in how we develop as a green energy technology economy.
Yeah, well, I think that so Wisconsin has a lot of wonderful institutions, you know, whether it be the state parks that I've been enjoying myself or the UW system. In this project, we were able to bring a whole bunch of undergraduate students into the research who assisted us in this work, as well as professors from around the state. In this way, we have helped students develop in their education. We have helped employers to meet other employers that they wouldn't maybe have otherwise done. We have hopefully brought the university together with some producers that might not have otherwise happened. Dr. Jewell mentioned, you know, some of the firms have contacted him. Some other firms have contacted me. I think this is really what it's all about. You know, if all these great institutions across the state are sort of pulling together towards future success, we can really do great things.
I'm so glad you put it in those contexts, because I had a myopic view that was thinking public-private is just the legislature and the executive branch and the companies trying to figure out how best to invest and move forward. I think of Foxconn and whether or not there is a Foxconn effect at play here. And it was one of the it was a controversial and continues to be deal that the state made with a private company. Does Foxconn or the relationship with the Foxconn in the state, does that play any role in the public-private partnerships that would be necessary to go forward?
Well, I think, Foxconn has an investment in the state of Wisconsin, but it's going to really be their call to the degree they want to participate moving forward. I think, the intent here is really to build relationships and to provide some information and direction, as well as to bring a variety of different entities into this process. It's a voluntary process. I think that the Foxconn relationship, where the state made a large investment in a particular firm, that's a different matter from what we're attempting to do here in this report. This is about trying to, you know, bring people together from different areas around the state to better understand likely future energy and energy supply chain trends, and then to understand how we can more effectively participate in that transition.
Yeah, and I'll add to that. I think you're probably right, Lee, that there is a warning message in the Foxconn story of making a very large investment, something brand new. And while Foxconn didn't really drive how we did our report one way or the other, I do think something that we do try to focus on in our approach is instead look at, okay, what are our existing manufacturing companies already good at? Mm-hmm. What do they already have a proven track record of success doing? And how can we just transition those technologies? So we are not trying to sort of create some brand new sector out of nothing, which carries obviously a lot of risks with it. And you see some of those risks in how the Foxconn project is.
Right. And as you described earlier, with the slow buildup of GM and the slow growth of Chrysler, and then the slow expansion of the economy throughout Wisconsin as a manufacturing economy as a result of that. And it's a stark contrast to the Foxconn, just not slow at all, but instantaneously there, and what that means for the economy and employment and the tax base going forward. So what, with this report out now, with an industry now providing you with feedback, what are the next steps going forward? And I'll start with you, Tom.
Yeah, well, I think so. Dr. Jewell mentioned it a little while earlier, but the next steps are really to start following up with some of these businesses. For example, some of the businesses that contacted me already were not in our report. I was not aware of the work they were doing, and it's very exciting to hear. You know, as an economist, this is one of the things that I you know, really makes my job worthwhile. I love hearing exciting new ideas that businesses are having and things that they're doing. And so I think this next step is just to continue to follow up with these firms, learn about their processes, learn who they're working with, which will likely lead to other firms, another step removed, and you know, build lines of communications about how we can help each other. I think that's the next step.
Matt, what do you see?
Yeah, I agree with that. And one of the things I'm excited about is identifying some ways that some of us at the universities in engineering can partner with some of these firms to help them, you know, if there is an incremental step of technology development needed to get them ready to participate in some of these supply chains, how can we help facilitate that? It might be as simple as using some of our expertise, writing grants, for example, to help a small business in Wisconsin connect with the Small Business Innovative Research Program through the federal government. Just as one example. And, you know, Wisconsin, we have 13 universities across the state. And this is a great and very distributed network. We're already out in the communities. We're already nearby these companies. And so there's lots of opportunities there to make connections and build those relationships. And that's what we're going to be trying to focus on doing this year.
Matt Jewell, Thomas Kemp, thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Lee.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. They both identified opportunities for Wisconsin's manufacturing companies to begin building the technology used in green energy production, and you can find a link to that report on our webpage at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.